a few weeks ago, we spoke on forgiveness and recognized that forgiveness is releasing the debt. You do not need the other person's involvement to forgive. You don't need their involvement to forgive. It comes from your heart. It's your process. Reconciliation needs both parties. And that's what we're talking about. If you missed it last couple of weeks ago, I'd urge you to get that because these talks really go together. Forgiveness comes from you, and that's your process to deal with. Reconciliation is both parties together. And so we're going to look at this subject of what Jesus said about reconciliation. I'd urge you to listen up. I'd urge you to listen to Holy Spirit. Let's switch off phones. If there's distractions, let's deal with those. We've had loads of distractions already, and Caroline just turned to me and said, this is going to be an important message, and I feel like it is. I feel like there's something of God on this message for us. Jesus came as the ultimate peacemaker. It says in Colossians 1:20, and through Jesus he came to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. Jesus died to bring you to peace. He died to bring you through to that place of peace. John 10:10 said, the thief comes to steal, kill and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. The point is this, where there's division, where there's discord, where there's disunity, where you see those things, it is the work of the enemy. You know it's not the work of God. Where you see those things in your own relationship, in your own heart, in your family relationships around you, you know it is the work of the enemy. Because Jesus said, I came to bring this peace. God is moving in us as a church, and as he moves across as he's moved across history and across time, we've seen that the two things that derail the move of God across history and across time are these things. One is lack of leadership, and the second is a disunity or discord that comes in the body of a people of God. When those things happen, when the leadership go off the rails, or where there's discord, disunity, disharmony that comes into the people of God, that's the thing that sends the thing off the rails. And it's so critical for us as we're in this season of God that we go after this issue with all our hearts, because it's the thing that threatens us as well as a church, as a move of God in this nation, if we allow disunity and discord to get hold of us. This message of reconciliation was central to Jesus' message. Matthew 5:9 said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. If you want to look like your dad, you're a peacemaker. If you want to look like your dad, you are a peacemaker. That's what he's saying. And notice it's not the peaceful. It's not those who just stick their heads in the sand and say, oh, I never have any conflict. I'm all right. You know, it's not those. It's the peacemakers. Not just the peaceful. It's the peacemakers. And that word blessed doesn't mean that one day you will be happy. Blessed actually means, in the context, it means happy already are the peacemakers. And you might think to yourself, no, I hate conflict. How does conflict make me happy? No, I avoid conflict because conflict doesn't make me happy. And I was praying about this and saying, Lord, they're right. Conflict does not make us happy. Why does it say happy already? And he just said to me, look at your own life, Simon. And I thought through, actually, and I thought, actually, there are very few people that I have not resolved conflict with, that I've got issues, and I thought actually of a few as I was preparing this, actually there is a few that I need to sort out. But anyway, there are very few. There are very, very few. Now, there might be 50 of you, you know, form an orderly queue at the end of the service. There might be 50 of you got a problem with me, but there are very few that I can genuinely say in my heart, I've not sought to resolve issues with. And then I thought back of some of the people that I've met in my life who have just been destroyed by bitterness. Literally. You know, pray for people who've been torn apart by something that happened 30 years ago that they've never resolved. And it's literally destroyed their lives. And the Lord said to me, blessed are the peacemakers. I'm not saying that I'm perfect, but you see, there's an indicator there. God does something in your heart when you become a peacemaker. There's a story about the Yamasee Nation. It was a Native American tribe. And they were ethnically cleansed during the early days of the colonization of America, basically by settlers wanting more land. And there was a lady called Fern Noble. She was a descendant of the tribe, one of the few kind of remnants of the tribe that survived. She became a Christian, and she became a prayer warrior for her nation and for particularly her tribe. And she undertook an 800-mile prayer journey following the track of a man called, it was a Union Army general called William Sherman. And basically, Sherman had set out with his soldiers, taking out an 800-mile journey, and he basically raped, pillaged, and destroyed everyone in his path that was from this tribe. He was the primary cause of her tribe being wiped out. And so she decided, the Lord spoke, and she decided to follow the path that he had taken. And as she walked along this path, she kept asking the Lord, why are so few of my tribe that are surviving? Why are so few Native Americans in this nation believers? So few of them are believers. So few of them are Christians. Why is it? It's against the statistics even of the population of the state. Why are so few come through to faith in Christ? And as she walked on that, she had a vision of a Bible. And on top of it were a stack of papers. And the Lord spoke to her and said, those are the covenants, the agreements that were written by the settlers and the natives and the agreements that were broken. And when the Westerners came and preached the gospel, on top of the Bible was this stack of stuff that had never been dealt with. Agreements, contracts, land things that had been broken as they decimated the Native American people in their arrival in the States. And she realized that before her people could receive the gospel, there had to be this reconciliation in their lives. And you see, it's critical for us as we recognize that where we go, declaring the gospel, we have to come as peacemakers. We have to come as people who have worked through issues of reconciliation, who have moved from the place of living in conflict to be people who, whatever it takes, whatever we can do about it on our part, that we bring peace wherever we go. Jesus taught his followers this four-stage process of pursuing peace. Matthew 18, verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault. Between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. But if he doesn't listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile or a tax collector. These are powerful words. And if only we would follow Jesus's script for reconciliation, things would change for us. And he laid out this four-stage plan of reconciliation, which is like a template for us, written 2,000 years ago, and still works and still applies today. The first thing he says to him, if your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault. There are wrong ways of handling anger, four main wrong ways. I don't know if you've heard of them. The first is an exploder. These are the people who don't go and show other people their fault. What they do is they bottle it up, and then, boom, they just blow on the slightest thing. Some of you had parents who were exploders. Nothing's wrong. Suddenly, nuclear war happened in my home today. Some of you are those people. And there is a massive collateral damage around you. You feel so much. Don't you feel good when you've exploded? Oh, all that pressure, I feel so good. But everyone else in their heart just takes a step back. Because they suddenly can't trust you. So there's the exploders. Then there's the somatizers. Soma is the Greek for body. It means to push anger inward. These people, instead of dealing with conflict, what they do is they take it out on their body. A lot of smokers are somatizers. They absorb stress into their body. People who overeat often are somatizers. They get rid of stress by taking it into their body. We can do it in all sorts of different ways to take out the anger that we really feel. Instead of resolving conflict, we take it out on our body. And of course, there's issues there. It has a devastating effect on us physically, to the extreme of self-harm and even suicide. That's a somatizer's way of dealing with conflict. Jesus said, go to your brother. Go to him. Don't take it out on your body. There's the self-punishers. These are the people I was talking with someone recently. They told me the situation that they'd been in. And I said, oh, that was terrible, the way that person treated you. And he said, oh, well, it was my fault, really. I was like, what? They're like, oh yeah, it was my issue really that caused it. Sometimes your wives who are beaten, you'll talk to them and they will say, yeah, but if only I hadn't burned the dinner, or if only I hadn't been back late, he wouldn't have done it. I'm like, what? No! No, don't punish yourself. Yes, sometimes there's responsibilities both sides, but self-punishers can never see the fault with anyone else. They just take it out on themselves. And the last is the passive-aggressive. These are four different ways that people use to avoid doing what Jesus told them to do. Go to your brother. The passive-aggressive, you know when you're with a passive-aggressive because they hit you, but you don't even know when they did it. You're like, that really hurt, but there's nothing that I can get back at. What just happened there? You walk away, and sometimes what they do is they use humour often, sarcasm often, and you feel like you've been punched, but you're laughing, you're thinking, ouch, that really hurt. Anyone relate to that? I know, not you, other people that you know I'm talking about. There's this passive-aggressive way of not actually going and dealing with anger, but you just get back. You rebel. You go after people with your humour or with your rebellion. A lot of teenagers deal with anger this way. They won't do what mum and dad say, or they'll do it, but they'll do it with a cloud. I used to do this as a teenager. You'll do it all right, but man alive, it was like, what happened? Where'd the sun go in this house? Darkness has fallen on this house. Passive aggressive. I'll do it. But inside you'll know I'm not really doing it. I'm not really obeying. A true son of the Father, that's what it says. Blessed are the peacemakers because they are sons of God. A true son of the Father is not afraid to go and deal with his brother when they've sinned against him. Why? Because he's totally secure in the fact that God loves him. He's totally secure in the love of God in his heart. She's totally secure that God has got him safe, got her safe in his hands and in her hands. Identity is key to this stuff. Go to him, Jesus said. He didn't say, send him a nasty text message or an email. I tell you guys, there is a culture developing of firing off text messages. I cannot tell you the number of conflicts that have happened over the last 6 months in this church through people firing off a quick text message, a quick email. Oh, it feels so good, doesn't it? And they did this, boom, and it's gone. And you're like, oh, it feels so good. I did it once. I had a conflict with somebody, and they sent me this email. It was such a nasty email, and I thought, right. And so I crafted this email. It was like a carefully crafted missile. And I thought, right, I'm going to write this thing. And it took me 30 minutes to write it, and it was perfect. It was beautiful. It was a work of art. And I sent it, and off it went into the ether, and it was gone. I thought, I feel so much better to get that. But I got him right in the heart with my cutting words. Nailed him. But you know what? I didn't feel any peace because I was waiting for his response. Have you ever done that? I was waiting. Waiting to see what he would say. I thought I'd feel better after sending it. I felt worse. I was waiting. He didn't reply. Where is he? What's he doing? Why isn't he checking his email? Then suddenly the email came back. What? I can't believe it. How could he respond in that way? And so, right, another half an hour to craft another email. And this went on and on and on, email after email. Our relationship was completely destroyed. It's never actually recovered. Much as I'd want it to. The relationship, because we, instead of doing what Jesus said, instead of going to one another, you know, I'd say even the phone is a last resort for dealing with conflict. Last resort. Go to one another. Because you can see the face. You can express what's in your heart. Someone recently was saying to me, you know, I've fallen out with someone over these emails we sent. I said, well, let me see the email you sent. I never asked to see the other person's email. Let me see the email you sent. And I read the email and said, well, I can see why they got upset with you. Oh, really? I said, yeah, this comes across as this, that, and that. That wasn't what I meant. It's so difficult to express your heart over email. It is impossible to do it over a text message. Can I say, let's break this culture. Technology will serve us wonderfully, but it's a terrible master. Break this culture of trying to resolve conflict over text message. You cannot do it. The lie is this. You think, if I send this quick text message, I'll deal with this quickly. No, you will not. You will make it 10 times worse, probably, by sending off a quick or a fast text message in that. Let's break that one. Don't go to someone else first. Jesus says, go to your brother. But I want to talk to a few people first about to rally support for my side, for my argument. I want to rally a few friends. I'm right, aren't I, is basically what I want them to agree with. Now, sometimes it's okay. If you're facing a particularly difficult issue, it's okay to get prayer support. How do you know if it's real, genuine, looking for advice? Or if it's just gossip? If it's just rallying support, how do you know? I always look for this. Was there an action as a result of my conversation? Am I now more prepared to go and talk to the person that I've really got an issue with? That's the difference in my mind. Sometimes I've actually had to go back because I've had a really good conversation. I've vented something off and I feel, oh, so much better now, you know, so much better. I've talked to Steve about PJ or something like that. I'm like, I feel so much better now. And that hasn't happened. That's a fictional. So much better now. But then I think to myself as I walk away, I think, actually, what was the action as a result of that conversation? What really has changed? And sometimes I've gone back to people and said, look, you know, actually, I'm sorry I had that conversation. It was just gossip. I was just rallying your support. I just need to go and sort it out with PJ. Fictional. I just need to go and sort it out with the person. I'm sorry I've dragged you into it. Because that's what we want to do, isn't it? Drag the collateral damage in with us. And we end up with an issue between me and another becomes an issue between me and about 20 different people in that situation. Don't leave it too long. Go to your brother, Jesus said. Go to him. Don't leave it. I once left it 6 months before I went to somebody. And the first thing they said to me was, why did you leave it 6 months? It was such a little thing that got so out of proportion over 6 months. Go to your brother. And go alone if you can. Now sometimes there's extreme extenuating circumstances, you know, where you can't go alone on the first occasion. Extremely abusive relationships or whatever. But if you can, within all possibility, if you can, go alone. It preserves their dignity. It increases the chance of this thing resolving itself properly. How to bring challenge in a godly way. Don't shout and scream, in case you haven't learned that already. Never say always, and always avoid saying never. You always do this! Well, it's unlikely that they always do it. You never do. Well, it's unlikely that they never. It just inflames the situation. Immediately, they've got some way to defend themselves because they can say, well, I don't always do it. There's at least one time I can remember I didn't do it. So don't use those words. Don't confuse their behavior with their identity. When you go to your brother, you know, saying things like, you're a mess or you're lazy will not help the situation because you're calling on their identity. But you can say things like, you know what, you often leave a mess around the house. Again, this is not you guys, this is somebody else, you know, I'm hypothetical. You often leave a mess. You know, in that situation, I felt like you were lazy. You were just wanting me to sort your stuff out, whereas actually you were just being lazy. See, it's so different to saying you're messy. There's just a difference in confusing their identity. And don't compare people with others. If only you could be like, more like your John. If only you weren't like your dad. It's toxic to resolving conflict. Instead of that, use the communication wheel. Who has seen the communication wheel before? Oh gosh, not many of you. Fantastic. My lovely wife Caroline is going to explain how you use the communication wheel.
Okay. Okay, so just to say, at first, this feels really, really unnatural. You feel a bit robotic, and you think, oh, this is just too sort of technical or whatever. But it is worth pushing through. It's really proven to help me and to work for me. It does two things. It forces me to work out what I'm feeling before I go to the person. And it sort of also, for instance, with Simon, when he starts, we haven't got the communication wheel up here, but it's in your notes. When he starts using these words like, I sense this and that, and I thought this, I feel this, how about we do this? Then I can receive it as love because I know, just by those sort of buzzwords, I know that he is trying to communicate well with me and he's trying to kind of move us to a positive action. And hopefully he does the same when I use those words. He feels loved, hopefully. And this obviously isn't just for a husband and wife. This is for everybody, for every relationship. So I'll give you an example from our lives from last week when we used this. On Monday morning last week, I said to Simon, hey, do you think at some point today you could print off the photos for Caleb's homework? And he looked up at me and was like, okay, I just want to know right now the whole list of jobs that you want me to get done today. I do not want jobs drip-fed me all day long. I'm tired and I need a day off. Okay? So I was like, whoa. So of course I defended myself. I felt really angry. He said he would print the photos off. And then the irritation just sort of simmered somewhere in my subconscious all day. Until we got to the evening and I thought, okay, let's try the communication wheel. Well, it wasn't quite like that. First, I said something really sarcastic that was loosely kind of related to my feelings, and he said, "So, what do you mean by that? Let's talk about it." And I thought, "All right, I'll try the communication wheel." So, I'm just going to talk you through how it works. So, I said to him, "When you sighed this morning and said I don't want to be drip-fed jobs all day, I sensed that you were irritated with me and that this irritation was possibly ongoing. I thought, that is so unjust. I have asked you to do one thing and I have, looked after the kids for a whole week while you went to Turkey and while you did the conference, and I've only asked you to do one thing and you answered me in a really mean tone. That's what I thought. I felt like I was a huge irritation to you, that I was the only thing between you and your lovely day off. My desire, so what I said was, the next thing on the wheel is desire. What I said was, what I really want to do is work together so that somehow we can accomplish all that we need to accomplish on our days off and work together so that the house and the family run well, and you have a nice, relaxing day off, and me too. So the action that I want to do, what I'm proposing, is that we now talk about how we can make that work for us. And so he apologized straight away. Of course, he knew that he had used a rude tone with me in the morning. And then I was open to listen to what he had to say. So he was able to explain how it makes him, or how he feels when I give him jobs all day long, just as I remember them and expect him to jump up and do them straight away. And he told me that his desire is the same as me, that he wants to help with the house and have a nice day off. And then he suggested a solution where I make a list, leave it on the side in the kitchen, and then he can do it when he wants to during the day instead of when I command that he does. So that sounded great to me, and it was all agreed, and he kind of broke the ice and smiled and said, "There, I said it," and then it was over. So for the sake of kind of simplicity and clarity, I've used a really kind of minor example this morning that's pretty mild and not that, life-threatening. But I have found that this is a brilliant tool as well with kind of the bigger issues and the deeper hurts. Often when there's something bigger going on for me, I am just overwhelmed with emotion and feelings. And this is such a valuable process for me, to just to sit down with Jesus beforehand and say, "I need you to help me work through what I am feeling, and so that I can come up with one I feel statement to be a part of the communication wheel." And he has been so faithful, and he's always helped me to be able to work out. He knows how I'm feeling. He's always helped me be able to work out how I'm feeling. And the confrontation then is way more constructive. I also think this is great for everyone, because obviously people like me who are more feelings-based get to work through their feelings and then express them. And people like Simon, who are more task-based, have a really solid action at the end that we're going to go away and do. And I think Simon would say this works a lot better than how it used to work in our marriage, where I would kind of take 2 or 3 hours and he would faithfully listen and I would tell all of my feelings and then at the end say, "Okay, now I've said all that. That's not any of that how I'm feeling. This is now how I'm feeling." Poor guy. All right, go ahead.
That's brilliant.
They say there are two problems in every marriage, the man and the woman. And obviously, in our marriage, most of this is with Caroline. She happened to pick one minor imperfection of mine. Let's call it a blemish, shall we, rather than an imperfection. It's good to get hold of this. And as Caroline said, when we first started doing this in our marriage, it was really clunky. I remember one time we actually sat down with the wheel in front of us talking through the different... Now we just do it as a natural way of relating. And it's obviously not just for marriage. This is for every relationship. I use this all the time to deal and resolve conflict. It's so critical. To become a peacemaker, you've got to have tools to know how to deal. Because anyone here like conflict? Anyone? No one responded. I was going to call you a sicko if you did, but no one likes it, do they? And we need tools to become the kind of people that God is calling us to be. Blessed are the peacemakers, those who are not just peaceful, but those who go out and create peace by resolving conflict in a godly way. The aim is reconciliation. That's what Jesus said. You have gained your brother. You don't go into the conflict looking to score points or get your own way. You go in to gain relationship, to make connection again with one another. Particularly this applies in the church. You know, however badly they have hurt you, they are still your brother and sister in Christ. You are still going to be with them for all eternity. If you don't resolve it now, you're going to have to resolve it at some point. Now, I don't say those things lightly because I recognize there's a lot of hurt and pain that we carry. But it is going to have to be resolved. And the cross of Christ is powerful enough to do it. You will have to start the reconciliation process at some point. And obviously you need to talk that through, particularly where there's issues of divorce and pain and parental relationships that have been abusive and all that kind of stuff. But in your own heart, start where we started last time. Forgiveness is the first key. And then you can move as far as you can along the reconciliation process with the help of Christ. I remember I was... had a long-standing friend recently, and they did something that really, really hurt me, was really, really painful to me. And I thought about it, and I just thought, I'm not even in the same place as them now. I'm just going to leave it. And I just thought to myself, we've been through too much to let this friendship fail over this issue. And so I did an about turn. And I thought, although it was inconvenient and it was complex to arrange a meeting, I thought, no, actually, we've got to sort this out. We've got to resolve this because our relationship is worth too much to leave this. When you go in, be open to learn and hear their side. Be open to it. How to be shown your faults. Who likes being shown their fault? Anyone enjoy that? Nobody does. How do you get shown your fault? Make a conscious choice not to be defensive. You know, I learned something that changed my life, and it's this. Whenever there is a disagreement, God is trying to speak to both of you. Whenever there is a disagreement, God is trying to speak to both of you. You can learn from anyone. I've learned so much from my kids. I have profound thoughts at three that I've never thought of at my great age. You can learn from anyone. You can learn from anyone. Whenever there's a disagreement, God is trying to speak to both of you. And it says, if he listens to you, when someone comes to you, your response is key. When someone comes to you to confront you, your response is key. Listen is the first thing you should do. Listen to them. Listen to them. I remember one time I had a lady come to me. She had 8 issues. I didn't know at the beginning they were 8. But there were 8 issues with things I hadn't even done yet. I was about to do. Fears and concerns she had. And as she was going through them, I thought, help me, Jesus, remember these. 8 of them. They kept coming. 1, I thought maybe there's 3. No, 2, 3, 4. Oh my goodness, am I going to ever remember? Jesus, help me remember these. Anyway, got to the end. I was like, is there anything else? Surely not. Is there anything else? No, there was 8. There was 8 issues. Probably took her 45 minutes. And then I said, sorry? It wasn't you, Caroline. No. And then it was, anyway. At the end of 45 minutes, I said, okay, this is what I've heard you say. And I, with the help of God, went through those 8 issues and was able to list off her 8 issues that she had with things I hadn't even done yet, I was about to do, or what she thought I was about to do. And I was able to list them off with the grace of God. And I got to the end and I said, are those the issues? Is there anything else? She said, no. And I said, let's talk about them then. And she said, I don't think we really need to. The very fact that you were able to remember and recollect clearly what I just said to you has done most of the work. There was a few things we needed to talk about, but the bulk of it was done just by me listening to her and responding and telling her what I thought she had said. It made a huge difference to that confrontation. Ask questions, repeat back to them what they said, and apologize as soon as you can. There are so many who feel like the lie they believe is, if I apologize, it shows that I'm weak in some way. No. If you apologize, it shows you are strong. It shows that Christ has done such a work of security in your heart that you can say, I'm so sorry that your feelings got hurt. Even if it was something unintentional, you can say, I'm so sorry that you were hurt by what I did. I never intended that at all. Just apologize for anything you can. Don't feel like you've got to stand your ground and, no, I've got to fight for my rights here. No, just apologize for anything you can in that situation. Obviously, you don't have to pretend to be sorry if you think, oh, you know, I don't feel it at all. Don't pretend, but just work it through to the point in your heart. Sometimes you need to say to people, if you just can't get an agreement with them, you need to say, look, we need to move and meet with someone else. This was stage B that Jesus talked about. We'll go through these briefly. Because sometimes you've gone to someone and it hasn't worked, or they've come to you and it's just not connecting. You're just not getting on the same page. You've got to move to the second step. And Jesus said this, take one or two others along with you. Don't look for another militant. If they come to the meeting with you with weapons, you pick the wrong person. Take someone impartial with you. Someone who's got a connection with both sides. Take someone with you if you need to. Because it's the next stage of the reconciliation process. And if someone comes to you and says, look, I've got an issue. You know, say, you know, Steve comes to me and says, look, I've got an issue with PJ. I mean, as he regularly does. sorry, PJ, you're in the line of fire today. It was your birthday yesterday, so it's open season now. So Steve comes to me and says, I've got an issue with PJ. What is the worst thing that I can do? Anyone tell me? The worst thing I can do is go to PJ and say, Steve's got an issue with you. Oh my goodness, I've had so many situations like that in the last 6 months. Don't do it, okay? Don't fill in the circle. Why? Because what happens is that then PJ is in an impossible situation. He's in an impossible situation because he cannot go to Steve because Steve doesn't know that I've told him, that I've just betrayed that confidence. He can't go to Steve. And so PJ now has got this, oh, he's got an issue with me and I can't even talk to him about it. Don't fill in the circle. No, I've had people come to me and they want to vent and I say to them, look, you've got to go and meet with a person. And then they start wriggling. They won't respond well. You've got to go and meet with them. They've got an anger issue. They might hit me. You've just got to go and meet with them. Now, obviously, if they seriously might hit them, I wouldn't send them into that situation. But so often we try and wriggle out of it, don't we, by meeting with a third person. And actually, if someone comes to you and says, look, I've got this issue with so-and-so, you say to them, look, you've just got to go and meet with them. You've just got to go and sort it out with them. It's fine telling me, but there's nothing I can do about it. You've just got to go and meet with them. And we don't want to do that, what Jesus said, go and meet with them. So now sometimes we've got to draw a third party into it. And they might say to you, and sometimes people have said to me, look, there's been so much abuse and so much difficulty over so many years. I can't meet with them on my own. And then that's the stage. Okay, let's meet together. Let's meet as a three or a four of us in that situation. If you're in that role of a third party, do everything you can to stay impartial. Do everything you can not to take sides. Help provide a safe environment, particularly for the one who's taking the most of the flack in this. Often it's the guy, if it's a marriage situation. Provide a safe environment for them, but also provide a safe environment for the lady. Often, when I've met in marriage situations, the guys are massively defensive because we like to defend. And actually, you've got to provide a safe environment for the guy to open up as well. But you've also got to provide a safe environment for the lady because she often has spent years not being heard. I'm just generalizing here. Of course, it can be the other way around. But create a safe environment for both if you're in that situation. Ask questions if you think there's a miscommunication. Sum up. And then thirdly, Jesus says, if you can't resolve it in that small group situation, then you've got to take it to the church. He's probably talking about church leadership here. And this is where you can call on someone in leadership to help you. And I'm helping you walk through this process, how we apply this in a local church. Your small group leader, your coach, they love this stuff. They're just waiting for you. You know, most of them checking their emails in the morning, just waiting for a conflict to come up so they can help you resolve it. No, I'm joking, they don't. But the point is, that's part of their role. That's part of their role. That's the part of the role of leadership in the church, is where it's gone, you know, past the one-on-one, and it's gone past the three together. Okay, let's get some leadership involved here to try and work this through. Try and work this through together. And then lastly, treat him, Jesus said, as a pagan or as a tax collector. It seems a bit harsh, doesn't it, really? Treat him like the Inland Revenue. People you don't want to meet on the street. Think, though, how did Jesus treat those people? There's an element where it gets to the point where the relationship with an individual in the church is so broken down. This has happened perhaps two or three times since I've been leading the church, where it's so broken down and we've tried our hardest to work it through, but we've had to say and put healthy boundaries for the sake of the rest of the church. Actually, this isn't a great place for you to be right now. Until you can change this area of your behaviour, it's not going to be okay for you to attend this small group, because you're just hurting too many people. It's not going to be okay for you to attend on a Sunday. You're just hurting too many people. It's too much pain around you at the moment. We want to see you change. We want to see you come forward. We love you as a brother or sister of Christ. But this isn't going to be a safe place for you or for anybody else to be right now. Do we disown them in the sense of never talk to them again? In some communities, they will tell the whole church, never talk to this person again. That's toxic stuff. The way Jesus treated pagans and tax collectors is that they were on his mission field. He was always seeking to win them. He was always hoping that there was a chance that they would come through to salvation again. We'll always keep the door open to people and say, if we can work this through, if you're willing to change in this area of your behaviour, we want to work this through with you. The mission to them never ends. There's a foundation of acceptance that we work from, that we can know the blessing of God when we're working as peacemakers. And it takes courage, doesn't it? Isn't it so much easier to avoid the conflict? To say, I don't want to go there. I'll avoid them. The church is big enough now. I won't sit near them or go near them. It's so easy to do that. But Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, happy in their heart, satisfied in God are they, because they are acting like their dad, who's always doing everything he can to reconcile us to himself. Even in the extent of our rebellion and our sin, he pursued us relentlessly and even sent his son to die for us on the cross. That's the message this morning. Act like your dad. And you've got to apply this to your situation. You've got to apply this to your relationships. You've got to allow the Holy Spirit to speak to you. Am I saying there's never a time for divorce? I'm not saying that. Am I saying there's never a time where you just cannot exist together in the same community? I'm not saying that. I'm saying you've got to do everything you can to apply these things as best as you can. Open heart before God. And saying, God, make me a peacemaker. I want to carry peace wherever I go. I want to do everything I can to be reconciled. I want to work my hardest. Give me your strength to change the relationships around me. Sometimes it takes years. We go through this process of forgiveness, don't we? We can deal with our stuff. We can deal with our forgiveness. But it takes years before that process of full reconciliation happens. Sometimes it never happens in this life. But whether it happens or not, our job is to keep our hearts open to the possibility. To keep our hearts open to the possibility that by the grace of God, something may change. In the aftermath of apartheid's collapse in South Africa, 1994, the government in South Africa put together this Truth and Reconciliation Commission. In one meeting, the commission gathered to reach a verdict on a woman, an elderly South African woman. And at the hearing, a group of white police officers led by Van der Broek admitted their personal responsibility for the death of her 18-year-old son. They acknowledged shooting the young man at point-blank range, setting his body on fire, and then partying around the fire until the body had been reduced to a little more than ash. 8 years later, Van der Broek again and his fellow officers intersected with a woman's life. This time, they took her husband into captivity. Then, sometime later, Van der Broek came knocking at her door once more, rousing her from bed. In the dead of night, he brought the woman to an isolated setting by a river where her husband lay tied to a pile of wood. As she watched, he and the officers doused the man with gasoline, then ignited a fire. The last words her husband spoke to her in the midst of the blazing pyre were, "Forgive them." Now, at long last, the time for justice to come had been served. Those involved had confessed their guilt. The commission turned to the woman for a final statement regarding her desire for an appropriate punishment. "I want three things," the woman said calmly. "I want Mr. Van der Broek to take me to the place where they burned my husband's body. I would like to gather up the dust and give him a decent burial. Second, Mr. Van der Broek took all my family away from me, so I still have a lot of love to give. Twice a month, I would like for him to come to the ghetto and spend a day with me so that I can be a mother to him. Third, I would like Mr. Van der Broek to know that he is forgiven by God and that I forgive him too. And I would like someone to come and lead me by the hand to where Mr. Van der Broek is so that I can embrace him and he can know that my forgiveness is real." As the elderly woman made her way across the silent courtroom, Van der Broek reportedly fainted, overcome by emotion. And then the silence was broken when someone began, "Amazing Grace." And soon others picked up the words of the familiar hymn, so that finally the entire audience in the courtroom was joined as they sung, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me." When we fully understand what Christ has done on the cross, it changes us to be peacemakers.